syphilis.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Russ.
And I'm Abe Foreman, the Sausage King of Chicago.
And we're two dads who love watching
and talking
movies. On this podcast, we are taking a sick day with Ferris Bueller's Day Off. We started playing hooky to watch movies together when we were 10 years old in John's basement.
That's me.
34 years later,
my sausage is a bit bigger.
We're back in the basement.
Russ's basement.
And we're going to mispronounce words.
And I'm going to swear occasionally.
And most importantly, have fun. This is just another review podcast.
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, because it's now.
What is that?
What? Is someone playing keyboards? That's right, folks. Sean brought a keyboard.
That's right. In honor of our Ferris Bueller's synthesizer keyboard. I brought a keyboard.
Nice.
Yeah.
We're talking about Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Ooh, yeah.
1986 film directed by John Hughes and written by John Hughes, I assume. Starring Matthew Broderick, Mia Sara, Alan Ruck, Jeffrey Jones, and Jennifer Grey.
Yeah, and cameos by a few others too, which we'll get into, right?
Yeah, I didn't notice any of the cameos other than the Charlie Sheen cameo, but... Oh. But yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing from you who those other people were.
Yeah, there's just a few.
Just a few podcasts. That didn't cost too much to make Ferris Bueller's Day Off back in the 80s, but it made a lot of money.
Yeah, man. $5 million to make, $70 million return. What is that? Do math.
Five pie.
Damn it.
Five pies.
That's something you could put, I don't know.
You could put your cheek in it.
Mm.
You could twirl around. You could put a piece of coal in your butthole and make a diamond.
Yeah, because you're just that uptight.
Sean took a synopsis from Wikipedia, so we're going to kind of break that up, and then we're going to talk about different parts of the film. Are you ready, Sean?
I am ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's get into it.
Let's go. Ready?
Yep.
All right. In a Chicago suburb, one month before...
Anyone?
Before graduation, high school senior Ferris Bueller...
Played by careless driver Matthew Broderick.
...fakes illness to stay home from school. His parents believe he is...
Anyone know what his parents believe?
They believe he's ill, though his sister Jeannie...
Played by Dirty Dancing Jennifer Grey.
Oh, I carried a watermelon. Does not. She doesn't think he's ill. After learning Ferris stayed home for the day, the Dean of Students, Ed Rooney...
Played by sex offender Ed Rooney.
Oh my gosh. ...is determined to expose Ferris's chronic truancy.
Grace!
Oh.
And when I said played by sex offender Ed Rooney, I meant played by sex offender Jeffrey Jones.
Yeah, like, so are we going to address the elephant in the room here real quick? And then are we going to go, let's just leave it alone.
Okay, and then don't talk about that Jeffrey Jones.
We don't need to talk about pedophilia. But
Jeffrey Jones. Let's not talk about, yeah. This is what we look for. This is what people look for
this
in a podcast.
This is a positive, happy movie. Why ruin it with some something bad?
Well, and why did Jeffrey Jones ruin every movie he's in? Because he...
It's a pedo
bear.
Couldn't
keep his hands to himself. Mm. It's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. He's a sick man. Yeah. But, you know, he plays a mean Ed Rooney.
He plays a mean Ed Rooney. Remember, folks, all principals are pedophiles.
All of them?
No, none of them are. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Okay, well, let's start off. Okay, here. Did you ever pull a Ferris Bueller? You must have. We've all pulled a Ferris Bueller.
I don't feel too well.
No.
And you don't have a fever because you're not really sick, but you're just maybe anxious. You don't want to go to school. You've had enough.
Yeah. My girls have been pulling a lot of Ferris Buellers lately.
Oh, yeah. Have they seen this movie?
I don't feel well. And that's all it takes is,
yeah.
Oh, I guess, you know, stay home today. And
oh, I put down my foot and I say, well, if you're going to stay home, there's no TV, no devices. And they're like, well, I could probably go to school.
Yeah, we try and do that. Yeah. And still they say, okay. But then they bug you enough while you're trying to work. And finally you break out the iPad. And
right.
Here.
See, yeah. See, I don't, if I'm staying home with them, I'm calling it a sick day because I don't work from home like you.
Oh.
So then I'm there and I'm like, okay, well, go to bed. If you're sick, go to bed.
Yep. Time to get some rest.
I can't, I don't need to focus on anything else other than getting them well.
Mm. Yeah. I'm pretty, so yeah, yeah, my kids are doing it. And it's probably just karma because I'm definitely know I did it as a kid.
I did it as a kid. I mean, I really liked this movie when I was a kid. I have like core memories of this film, even though I bet you I have not seen this film for 20 plus years, but I can remember three things that really stick out for me from watching Ferris Bueller as a young lad. One, the dummy in the bed, the whole system he's got with the bedroom door as it opens. The dummy kind of moves up and down. I still remember
the
that.
The Rube Goldberg contraption, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The two, it's the car, the Ferrari falling backwards out of the window and crashing into the like the beautiful landscape around them. Chicago landscape, I guess. And three, do you want a gummy bear? That whole idea of this girl pulling out a gummy bear from her pocket. It's warm from my pocket.
I still quote that all the time. You know, when I'm like, you want a gummy bear? It's all soft and warm. It's been in my pocket.
You know who that girl reminds me of? Like who she looks like to me?
No.
Sean. Oh, shoot. Mark the time. She kind of reminded me of you as a little kid. Like if you crossed your eyes and wore your Coke bottle glasses.
I didn't have Coke bottle glasses.
If you had them and wore them, I would say okay. That, you know, you would be like a perfect, maybe we can we find a picture of you as a young child that best represents that character and we can just post it on our Instagram that we never no okay,
forget it. Yeah, we can. Let's prove your theory right here. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around, you might miss it. I really like that quote.
Carpe diem.
What's that mean?
Gather your rosebuds while you may. It's the whole, you know, don't take it for granted. You might not be here tomorrow, so enjoy the moment. Be here now. Yeah, that's what it reminded me of when I heard Ferris. A lot of talking to the camera here.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Breaking that fourth wall. Right.
I didn't remember that part when I rewatched it. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the young Matthew Broderick, just kind of him just owning his character and owning the screen there. I couldn't, you know, he just was silly. He was just like completely goofy.
Very charismatic. Yeah. It's hard to picture anybody else other than Matthew Broderick being able to play Ferris Bueller as well as he did.
Right. You know, but you know who I would have liked to play the female character?
Mia.
What's that?
Oh, yeah. Mia. Yeah,
Sloan.
Yes.
Sloan. I was thinking about it and I've been watching. I'm like, like she's not bad. She's not great. Like nothing other than she's very charismatic as well.
But she kind of lets Cameron and Ferris kind of steal the show. She's sort of, I don't know.
She doesn't stick out.
She's kind of elegant and more reserved than they are and stuff.
But you know who would have been good? Mm. Jennifer Connelly. Mm. If Jennifer Connelly was in that part, I think she would have done more with it.
Yeah.
And that would have been, you know, that was Labyrinth year for her.
Right.
So would she be too young? Like she's probably playing a 13-year-old in Labyrinth.
I'm not sure. I heard Molly Ringwald was
16 candles.
Yeah, sort of talking to John Hughes about the part, but then he said no, like it's not the right role for you. It's too small of a role. And
oh, okay,
yeah, or at least that's what Molly Ringwald says. I didn't get the role because it was too small. I don't know. I guess trying to justify why she didn't
because there really isn't room for her to be much of a character other than just a. Say Cameron?
Right.
Oh, Ferris.
And now characters. Speaking of characters, Ed Rooney and Grace, the secretary.
Yes,
these
amazing.
Are two amazing, the main opposition against Ferris Bueller the whole time, you know, and the only opposition I think he gets all day. But yeah, talk about some great characters. These two are pulling the constant pencils out of her
and
hair.
Smelling it.
Oh, yeah. And then smelling the white out. And supposedly a lot of her lines were ad-libbed.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like, and you really like the part where she goes, Sporter, Sportos, Motorheads, Geek Sluts, Blondes, Wastoids, Dweebies, Dick. They think he's a righteous dude. That was improvised. The righteous.
Oh, really?
The righteous dude was improvised on her part.
That's awesome.
And the pulling of the pencils was her own contribution as well, I think. She she created that hairstyle that she had, actually.
That was the first time anyone ever wore their hair that way?
Well, I don't know. Supposedly, the hairstylist on the movie was very busy doing Mia Sara's hair.
Okay.
And couldn't recreate the style that... What's her name?
Edie McClurg.
Yeah.
McClurg.
Anyway, so she did her own hair. And then when John Hughes came and saw it, they were having a chuckle and seeing like how many pencils she could stick in her hair. And that's where that whole scene came from. But yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah. Edie McClurg. What a great name.
Edie McClurg. That's it.
Edie McClurg. Yeah, it is that. It is it.
She's great. She's like, amazing. I couldn't imagine acting with her with a straight face. Gosh. She's got such good, like, you know, she's hilarious, but she doesn't crack. Right?
No. I bet you they had a great time filming that.
I bet
so many good lines in this film. Like, even just like, my best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend's heard from the guy who knows of a kid who's going with a girl who saw Ferris pass out at the 34 flavors last night. no problem whatsoever. It's so many good things that as soon as they just kind of keeps the smile on your face the whole time you're kind of watching the film.
Yeah, the writing is witty and very, you know, fun and all that. For a movie that's not, doesn't have the greatest cinematography or, you know, and all that, it really relies on these great characters and really, really witty writing and stuff like that. And I find it very, you know, at least this movie, I don't know to compare it to other John Hughes movies, but I found this movie, other than Ferris and their whole day and stuff like that, but all the background characters are very grounded. It was like, and very real. It's almost like he just took regular high school students and said, here, come act. You know, when they do close-ups and stuff, everyone's got, you know, their pimples and zits and all that stuff still. It looks like a very, very real teenagers, even though, you know, some of them, you know, were genuine actors. You know?
Right. Yeah, no, there was amazing, like, could he get any more boring teachers and just kids that look awkward and just out of it? And I wonder if John Hughes is responsible for like changing the perspective of principals. So he's got like the, he's got this character, Ed Rooney, but he's also got,
the guy from the Breakfast Club. Yeah.
And so I wonder, like, you know, principals were just like doing their thing, like you're really supporting kids. And then John Hughes had a bunch of films, and then everyone hated principals for the rest of life. Do you think, because do you remember? I remember just feeling like we had a distrust. Maybe it was just the man, the patriarchy. Maybe it was just,
I like never had like any sort of relationship with my principals other than, you know, Mr. Turner from elementary school. And I wouldn't even say relationship, but, you know, just, he was kind of the most involved principal I remember.
Right.
You know, other than that, they were just sort of bureaucrats at the school, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess once you get to high school, you don't really come into contact with them unless you're like super high achieving or like the lowest of low and getting trouble. So us middle grade C, well, I was a C-pluser. I was keeping below the radar for the principal.
You were a good boy.
I was a good boy.
And I was a good boy. Excuse me.
Oh my gosh, make a note of that. And now, Sean's Cough, presented by...
Sean's Cough. last podcast, we were talking about No Country for Old Men, and while we were going at it and rapping about the movie, so to speak, you brought up your theory about... Sugar Man, being sort of the essence of evil or death or whatever that. It was a really good theory, and we kept jibing on it the whole time. So with this movie,
I have a new theory.
There is a theory out there, and it's a bit of a stretch.
Oh, wait a second. It's a theory out there or your theory?
It's a theory out there that I stumbled upon in my research. So when I went back and watched the movie, I kind of kept this theory in mind and tried looking for things to help justify it and all that. And like I said, it's a bit of a stretch, but some things do kind of make sense. So have you heard about the Fight Club theory of Ferris Bueller? Okay.
No, I have not.
Okay.
I have not.
Okay. This is actually a story about Cameron.
Okay.
And I truly believe that regardless of this theory or not, and we'll get into this at the end of the podcast. I've got to sort of wrap up anyways.
Wrap up.
But this is a movie about Cameron. Mm-hmm. And Ferris Bueller and Sloan are not actually real people. This is just a manifest.
Ferris Bueller and Sloan.
And Sloan. Real people. So Ferris and Sloan are sort of manifestations of Cameron's imagination.
Okay.
Cameron is Cameron. He is, you know, home, sick, alone, no friends, you know, very chained down by his dad or put down, you know, whatever you want to call it. Anyways, like that. So he sort of manifests this Ferris Bueller, this complete rock star, charismatic,
can do no wrong.
The complete opposite of what Cameron is.
Right, everyone and loves him.
Yeah, this is who Cameron wishes he could be. He wishes he could be Ferris. So he's manifesting that he's got Ferris as a best friend. And now Sloane is the girl, the hot girl in the school, the girl that Cameron would totally love to have, but is totally out of her league. Hmm. But who's can hook up with the girl is Ferris. So, right. So Ferris is sort of the every man that Cameron would like to be, wins the girl and stuff like that. So try and keep that a little bit in mind when we're jabbing about this or whatever like that, because in some aspects, it does make a little bit of sense. Because if you look at the day they had and how many things they were able to accomplish and how Ferris never gets caught, and there's a couple other little things too, and I'll bring them up as we get along. But anyways, keep that in mind as we move along.
So in this theory, Ferris Bueller is Tyler Durden, Brad Pitt's character from Fight Club.
Right. Cameron is Edward Norton. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So,
and actually, you know, this is probably I think we should watch Fight Club just so that we can talk about this. Nobody in Fight Club is real other than Edward Norton.
This is your new theory for this next podcast?
Well,
or this is a theory also online.
It's online, but it's very proven. And there actually is proof in the movie
that no one is real.
No one other than Edward Norton is real.
So so that's
because that's a whole different podcast. That's why you should pick Fight Club.
That's what I was going to question your theory for this, because in my perspective of Fight Club, Helen Bonham Carter's character is real. Mm-mm. But you're now flipping, and that's why you've attached Sloan to being fake.
I haven't watched Fight Club since learning this theory, so I've got to go back and watch it again.
Wow, challenge.
But I've watched a lot of rabbit holes on YouTube and stuff and read up about it, because I find it's a very interesting take on the movie.
Okay, all right.
Totally changes it.
So anyways. So for Ferris, just to kind of cap your theory for Ferris. Now, who in the family perspective, as far as the sister for Jennifer Grey's character, is she real in Cameron's? Is actually
well, that's why I said maybe this theory is a little stretched, because there are some other supporting characters and stuff like that don't make too much sense
but
to
what
be
if
a part of
that's really what if Ferris Bueller's family is really Cameron's family?
Could be, yeah.
Because you never see any member of Cameron. You don't know if he has a brother or sister.
Exactly.
You know he has a dad, but then Ferris Bueller's dad is maybe the opposite.
It's the family he wish he had.
Ooh, interesting.
You know, it's the girlfriend he wish he had. It's the family he wish he had.
It's the Jennifer Grey.
Let's really look at Ferris, how one-dimensional Ferris kind of is, right?
Well, he can do no wrong. He's like, he's perfect. He's like flawless.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. Let's move on. You did mention something about a car crash at the beginning.
Yes,
and I got a little piece of trivia here.
Okay. Random movie trivia. Nope.
Good. Even though they played siblings, Matthew Broderick and Jennifer Grey would later become engaged after this movie.
Yep.
Tragically, approximately a year later, after Broderick finished filming Biloxi Blues and before Grey's premiere for Dirty Dancing.
Biloxi Blues.
So somewhere in 1987, 88. The couple was involved in a fatal car crash in Northern Ireland.
And they both died?
No. Oh. The people involved in the other car died.
Right.
It was a mother and daughter. So I imagine that put a lot of strain on the relationship and put a big dark cloud over their engagement.
Yeah.
And I guess they called it off.
Yeah, that would.
I think they should slow down. I think the last thing they should do is get in a Ferrari. Hey?
And I think it was Matthew Broderick's fault.
Mm. This is all I know. Do you know more about this?
Well, I just know that I think he was charged initially, which would have...
With like manslaughter?
Or? Maybe, or reckless driving that would have put him in jail for 5 to 10 years. But then I think that he got charged differently.
And his Hollywood lawyer got him out of it?
Yeah, I guess so. OJ.
Hey, a true Ferris Bueller, he gets away with everything. Yeah. Eh? Same with Matthew Broderick. Maybe they're more in common.
Yeah. Art
imitates life.
Imitates life. Thank you.
There you go.
Okay, keep on going here.
Let's do it. Ferris persuades his hypochondriac best friend Cameron Fry,
played by Alan Ruck, guilty of killing it in Succession,
to help excuse Ferris's girlfriend Slo Peterson,
played by Mia Sara Connery Henson,
from school on the grounds that her grandmother died.
Call me sir, goddammit.
To complete the ruse that Sloane's father is picking her up from school, Ferris borrows Cameron's father's 1961 Ferraro 250 GT California Spider.
Rudy!
That's a name. Cameron, who is afraid of his father's wrath, is dismayed when Ferris decides to take the car on the day trip into Chicago. Ferris promises that they'll return the car as it was, including preserving the original odometer mileage.
I'll go.
And then when he gets out of the car and then he spazzes it right perfectly in the frame in the background and gets back in. That's a great scene. Alan Ruck was 27 years old when he filmed this movie. So he was quite a bit older. He was worried that he would not appeal or be able to portray a younger person. Version of himself.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought.
But I thought you did great.
Yeah, he looked as the same age as everybody else.
He's got a very youthful face, I think.
He's got a youthful face, even now. Mm-hmm.
He ages well, doesn't he?
And so at this point of the film, I'm thinking, here's what's not really holding up. I think with the lens now, you go like, well, Ferris Bueller is not a good friend.
He's a bit of a dick.
He's not listening to what his friend, you know, his best friend saying no. He keeps on persuading him. And this may be, works better with your theory as far as like if he's just actually a part of Cameron's psyche.
Yeah.
If he's more of like just like the rebel.
Yeah.
The ego, the id, which was the ego. Oh, anyways, whatever.
I don't know. But he's got the, he doesn't have any reserves about doing anything.
Let's just do everything.
Yeah.
And then maybe it must be the id. And then the ego puts the id in place. But then he was like gaslighting Cameron a little bit, like, I didn't hurt you.
Yeah.
And then, seems to be having complete
I should say you do. And then, only decides to admit and apologize or show any sort of empathy or when Cameron actually decides to pick up his coat and leave.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But then he's still manipulating him. Yes, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then he brings Cameron back and he's like, well, you did kind of fuck up, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, so I'm going to need to borrow your dad's supercar.
Yeah.
So, a lot of phone calls, a lot of phone banter in this movie. There's a lot of prank calling, a lot of line holding. Is this the introduction to call waiting? You know what I mean? Is this when call waiting, you know, when, I got someone on the other line.
Well, they were using call waiting.
Well, that's what I mean. Was this the first time we saw it? Was this like product placement of call waiting?
We're sitting at home going, what phones can do that?
You can get someone to answer it while you're on the line.
You can hang up on the phone, but talk to somebody and then hang up on the phone and go back to the person you were talking to before. I mean, maybe. Hey, those are the good old days, eh?
I convinced my dad to get call waiting and he absolutely hated it. He was so old fashioned. He couldn't stand the little beep when he was on it and he didn't know how to work it. He hated it.
That's funny.
Yeah. I'm sure he was about ready to kick me out of the house because of it. But
and he couldn't get his VCR to work.
Oh, no. That's where I came in.
You were the VCR guy? Mm-hmm. Can you play your VCR song?
My VCR song?
On the keyboard. I mean, it's... Oh. John's VCR song. Beautiful.
That was nice. Man, I lost my notes all of a sudden. What the frick?
Oh, man. Hey, guys.
Hey.
While we're taking a
filibuster
break,
it,
Sean is looking for his notes. I want to point out that this episode is brought to you by
Pepsi.
Has kicked
there
you
we
off.
Go. There oh, we my. Go.
And we're back. Let's play
I'm
some.
So sorry.
Let's play some back music. Sean, do you want to play some music? Music. We're back. And we're back now. Sean's got his.
Now I got my notes back up. Sorry about that.
Anything?
You guys?
Anything else you've got for us?
Yeah, that synthesizer was something else. Eh? I think
that's the one that inspired you to bring a keyboard.
Totally. He's like putting those giant floppy disks into it, loading sounds and stuff. He complains that he didn't get a car, but supposedly a synthesizer that caliber ran about $8,000 wow. back in the day. So price of a car for yeah. sure.
And then. And he's got a computer that can hack the school's record system.
There you go.
So I mean, I think he's doing good. Why would he need a car?
I don't know. If
he's stay at home all day and you got
it's probably was like sort of the only quality, like not redeeming quality of, but like. I was sort of like, well, what's Ferris going to do? Like, what's he good for? You know, I guess he's good with computers. He's good right. with rigging
he,
shit up.
He's
right?
good with advice. People go to him for advice. He,
helps
to be,
people, right?
He helps, supposedly. He helps people.
Supposedly.
I don't know. I
but
mean,
we didn't see
we
it.
We never see it. People
that's just it. They all
people
talk
say, I've
about
got
him.
A guy you need to talk to, Ferris yeah. Bueller. Why? Yeah. I don't know. He only cares about himself. Mm. But he puts things in perspective. He helps me get through the day.
Oh, when they pick Sloan up from
the school.
The school or whatever.
Anyone?
And
anyone?
She's Bueller. I guess that's my dad.
Give daddy.
I find that line so funny.
Give daddy a kiss.
You have a kiss for daddy?
Is that what they do in that mm-hmm. family?
Supposedly that kiss wasn't that long, and through the magic of editing, they made it a lot longer than it.
She wanted
seemed.
Nothing to do with Matthew Brown.
No, I think they just decided to make it one of those sort of uncomfortable things. So that's how it is.
Those uncomfortable family. Father and daughter kisses.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's another a kind of a point about the Ferris is not real theory.
Okay, good.
Right. Is the fact that in every scene before he actually connects with Cameron that you see, he's wearing a different set of clothes.
Okay.
Why?
And that means oh that means
well, I don't know why don't know. why would this character be keep changing all the time, or is it right. just does he keep changing in Cameron's mind, you know right. what I mean, is Cameron building this character as we go along
versus
I don't know.
Cameron's just wearing a Gordie Howe jersey all day,
yeah, even though he's in Chicago.
What team did Gordie Howe play for, Sean?
The Detroit Red Wings.
Okay, hence the Detroit Red Wing jersey.
Yeah. Supposedly it's a jab at I don't know, at Chicago Blackhawks or something like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about hockey, so I'll just defer to you about the hockey expert. Can you play a hockey song on the keyboard? Is that a hockey song?
I guess. What is- We're improvising here. Come on.
But don't they always play the same types of songs when
oh, no, there's a whole shit ton of organ songs that they play, yeah. but I don't know how to play any of them.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess you're not as cool as you thought you were.
How do you do that? Da-da-da-da-da.
Wait, are you you're learning songs right in the moment. This is amazing. Let's keep going. Oh, charge. Yeah, that's good. Okay.
Here you go.
Okay, you are
on the
amazing.
Fly. The trio leave the car with parking attendants.
Do you speak English?
Who promptly go on a long joyride.
To a galaxy far, far away.
And the three explore the city, with Ferris taking care to stay out of view from his father.
I have to live with that trouser snake.
What's that all about?
It's a line that when Jennifer Grey is walking through the hallways of the school, her friend's like, oh, I heard about your brother. I'm so sorry. And then her comment is like, I have to live with that trouser snake.
Oh, jeez. That weird line.
That well, you know, that dick, I guess.
Oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah, that one-eyed trouser snake. Yeah. The piece of pork your wife says, friend, your posse or your cock. You can wrap it up in ribbons. You can stick it in a sock, but don't take it out in public or they'll stick you in the dock and you won't come back. Thank you very much.
Monty Python?
Yes. This moment's brought to you by Sean.
Corona.
Charge.
Corona. Great. Then the three, they visit the Art Institute of Chicago, use deception to dine at an upscale French restaurant, and go to a Chicago Cubs baseball game. They also attend the Von Steuben Day Parade.
Welcome.
With Ferris jumping on a boat and performing Twist and Shout by the Beatles.
Ferris jumped on a float?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? I thought you said a boat.
No. Did I?
I don't know.
You're not paying attention. Afloat.
He never had one lesson.
Afloat.
Afloat.
So supposedly Paul McCartney did not like the depiction of brass instruments playing along with Twist and Shout during the parade scene.
This is like his. This is what he tweeted after he watched the movie in 1986.
Even though Twitter wasn't out yet. But yeah, I guess that was his comment to John Hughes. And
dear, he got out the typewriter. Dear John, Mr. Hughes.
It's just he wrote a Dear John letter.
Dear John, I'm feeling awkward. This is the part where my theory is that this is just all a fever dream. That
Cameron's fever dream?
No, Ferris Bueller. Like Ferris Bueller is actually
sick. He's in a coma.
He is, no, like, you know, he is, instead of like him not being sick, and you don't really see this, but the idea is in my head, is that he is actually sick. In the whole film, he's just at home in bed with a fever and he just imagines.
This is a dream.
This is all a dream.
Right.
And because there is some base of reality in the beginning, but the reality curve continues to bend. And then, time really doesn't make much sense as the movie goes on. The events that happen to them when they're downtown Chicago start not making sense. Obviously, the whole parade scene is completely ridiculous.
Especially the parade in the middle of the work week.
Yes. Well, exactly.
Yeah.
I know baseball happens
it's
during
like 3:30 in the afternoon.
But do you think the baseball game would be that busy? Like on a school day? There's lots of kids at the baseball
game. I know they do have ball games during the week, during the day.
But usually when you watch baseball and there's like no one in this crowd, I assume that's because
I don't watch baseball.
Oh man, you're not my baseball person.
No.
Just you're my hockey person.
No.
Who's winning the hockey nowadays?
The Bears.
The Bears.
Who's a football team?
Oh.
It wasn't even, an extra part of the joke. He's like, who's winning? The guy's like, the Bears. That's Chicago's football team.
Oh.
It's the Cubs. We're playing somebody else.
Right. And who made that joke? I didn't
the bartender.
Of course.
Ed Rooney's like wiping himself. Yes,
and he's
off.
Not paying attention to the screen. And Ferris and Cameron, like, everybody's on the screen.
Yeah, Ferris catches a fly ball.
What's the score? It's tied. Who's winning? The Bears.
Yeah.
You're not paying attention.
Yeah. It was his little
principles totally are the worst. He's the dean of students.
Right.
Is this like a high school? Is this an American high school?
I guess.
And they have deans of students? Does that mean principal in American language?
I think so. I think it was just a nice fancy term for him.
In America, do you guys say dean of students or do you say principal? Y'all talk kind of funny up there in Canada, don't you?
So his mom's kind of blinded. She goes in and checks on him, comes home real quick, and you can see in the scene, you can clearly see the arm of the dummy in the foreground, and it's all like an African-American dummy, so his skin tone doesn't even match. But yeah, when she opens the door and he does like the little rollover, you can actually clearly see the dummy and the unmatching skin tone or whatever.
But it was dark. It was a dark
room. I guess, but you know, clearly his parents are quite clueless.
Yes,
so it was just an extra, a little extra cherry how clueless his parents were. So. Stock market scene.
Okay.
What was up with that? It was just kind of, there's a couple of scenes.
Why not go to the stock market?
I guess, but there's a couple random scenes, but and then all of a sudden Ferris is kind of blindly sort of loosely proposing to Sloan. And I'm just trying to think, I'm like, why? Like, does he genuinely want to propose to her, or is he just so hell-bent on trying to do as much as he can today that just adding getting married to the checklist would be another epic bucket list thing? I don't know.
And is he really that serious? I don't know. I mean, she has that little line at the end, I'm going to marry that guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think Wall Street, that was a big movie. Maybe the stock, and obviously with the economy in the 80s, the stock market was a big thing. Maybe it was just like a timely thing. Like, well, we gotta make it relevant. We gotta put them in the stock market.
It was a bit of scene about marriage. So Ferris proposes, and then Cameron makes a mention. I'll give you two words not to get married: my mother and my father. You know what I mean? Right. Sort of echoes his distaste for his home family life and stuff like that. So maybe that was it. You know what? And maybe that was the justification of the scene, but I kind of wondered about that. And then I think I kind of answered my own question here.
I'll leave now.
Okay, bye. The scene right after, Ferris kind of looks at the camera and he says, you know, there's two things. A, you can never go too far. And I forget what B was, but then it was kind of like, oh, okay. I think that's sort of it. He's just trying to take it to the limit. Take it to the limit.
I'm trying to think of what part you're talking about. Who says you can never take it too far?
Ferris does.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Can never take it too far.
I don't remember that part. Oh, I can't help you. Damn. You're on your own on this one.
Russ, I think your internet keeps bogging out here, buddy. I'm going to say make this
We're in the basement, offline. First of all. Hey, guys, we're back. I don't know if I mentioned this, but we're in the basement. And sometimes the Wi-Fi is pretty shoddy, if you know what I mean. You know, it's not just Netflix and chill anymore. It's Prime and Dime. It's Lube and Paramount. It's Snapple and Apple TV.
Snapples and Apples.
It's Squeeze My Disney. Mm. Squeeze Me Disney?
Mm.
It's Peacock or Shocker.
Speaking of the marriage thing, here's Hulu. Another little piece of trivia for you.
Okay, Hulu me, darling.
Ooh. Cindy Pickett and Lyman Ward, who played Ferris's parents in the movie, actually got married in real life after filming this
Get
movie.
Out of town.
And you know what? They didn't make it. They got divorced then in 1992.
Oh, everybody does. Mm, I mean, 50%. Is it still 50%? I feel like not as many people are getting married anymore, so the people that do get married stick with it.
Right.
But are you getting divorced anytime soon?
No.
Okay, me either.
No, sir. I'm in it for life, man.
Oh, wow.
I believe in the Institute of Marriage.
Good for you.
I wouldn't have asked my wife to marry if I wasn't committed to be with her for the rest of
my life.
So
you're like a duck. Mm-hmm. Ducks mate for life.
Penguin, duck.
What? Oh, ducks, okay.
Eagle, hamster.
Oh, hamster's married
I don't know.
Life.
I'm just throwing shit out
Eagle's
there.
Eagle's married. That's right, folks. Eagles marry for life.
Life
is brought to you by
until their partner dies.
Aww, which happens all the time with eagles. Where's your partner? He's dead.
What about the museum scene? I told you, you know, the stock market scene took a bit of trying to figure out what the heck that was all about. Now, what about the museum scene?
I think it's just Chicago tourism, like, invested a lot of money. They're like, okay, well, if you're going to film and if you're going to take the tax breaks, you need to capture a Cubs game, the National Museum, the fact that we like to party. I don't know.
So it was a bit of a Chicago tourism promo as well.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. They were hitting all the sites. They were doing all the things. Mm. What do you do when you're in Chicago? Well, let me tell you. You watch the Bears. Get back into it.
Wait. Another little thing. I really liked a little line I heard when Jeannie goes into the principal's office looking for Ed Rooney, and the secretary's like, oh, he's not here. He's away on personal business. And they get into a little squabble, her and
McClurg.
And as soon as Jeannie comes to the office, the secretary goes, oh, Jeannie, who's bugging you now?
Yeah, exactly. They're ribbing at each other right away.
Yeah, she totally gave her the gears right away.
And she's that girl that complains about everything.
Yeah.
He's bugging me. Which, so to my, like, there's later on, she's in the house and she comes across Dean of Students, Rooney, and she's surprised and she doesn't recognize him, maybe because it's so in the moment, but she runs upstairs and calls the cops because she thinks there's an intruder in her house. But she knows who Principal Rooney is. I mean, she's in the office all the time.
I think she just spazzed out at
so it was just time. Like she knew someone was there, but she didn't actually see that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though she did see the person and kicked him in the face.
Remember,
times.
He was pretty beat up too, right?
So, okay, well then, of course, why would she recognize him? He's got a black eye. I didn't recognize you with the blood from your lip. You look like a different person. Where's your shoe?
Again, Ferris is on the float. And Cameron and Sloan are kind of having a moment talking about, you know, what they want to do in life. And Cameron's not sure, and neither is Sloan. And then, you know, he looks over at Ferris and he's like, Ferris can do anything. And again, you know, it kind of comes to this whole, again, I'm saying it's a stretch, but still it comes to this whole thing where he's manifesting like, oh man, I sure wish I could be Ferris. You know, I wish I could,
right.
You know.
I wish I could be this other part of me, Tyler Durden. Yeah. But I like the, and I like this theory and I'm with it. I just like the idea that everyone else exists other than what Ferris is doing. Like there is a lot of moments between Sloan and Cameron that you're kind of like, oh, they seem very intimate with each other, even though they're not dating necessarily, but there seems to be, they have lots of moments where it's just the two of them.
And they're friendly with
each
other. Yeah.
They're flirting, genuine
friends,
right.
Too. You know, like when she first steps in the car and, you know, he's hiding under the convertible right. cover. And she's like, hi, Cameron. Right. You know, she knows he's there. Right.
Yeah. And did you see me naked? There was a weird like thing at the end where she's like, did you watch me? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, what is that? What's the point of that scene?
I think she was testing his catatonicness.
Right.
Is that even a word?
Yeah. I mean, it is now.
Catatosis?
It's catatosis.
It's ketosis?
Here's a song about catatosis.
Catatosis. It's when you don't do nothing and people get changed in front of you.
Just kidding. I've been watching you all the time. I'm catatosis.
I'm catatosis.
No, it's fine. You go change. It's like Michael Douglas at Basic Instinct. He was catatosis when Sharon Stone was getting changed. Mm. What a creep.
What a creep.
Yeah, I'm not creepy. I'm catatonic.
Ooh. Well, Ed Rooney prowls the Bueller home for Ferris, becoming victim to several pratfalls.
Severance
package. Several pratfalls. That's a good word. Jeannie skips pratfalls. I don't know. I didn't write this. Someone else did.
Wikipedia did.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess Wikipedia isn't
no,
a person.
No, someone contributed.
The idea of Wikipedia is everyone can contribute.
Right. And then sometimes you contribute to Wikipedia by donating, right?
Oh, we've talked about this.
Yes, I know. Jeannie skips class and returns home to confront Ferris, but finds Rooney instead. Shocked by his appearance, she knocks him unconscious and calls the police. Rooney regains consciousness and leaves, and the police arrest Jeannie for making a false report. Scene is incredible.
That scene is amazing.
She comes, Ferris Bueller. Ha! And then, ha! And then the triple kick in the nose.
Yeah. And she just runs up the stairs like nobody's business.
Yeah,
it's so
flailing.
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
This must be like John Hughes's like introduction to like, I could just make a bunch of guys try to get into a house and hijinks the whole movie. Like this, he must be like seeing how this is working and being like,
this was the precursor to Home Alone.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's thinking about Home Alone. Like, yeah, this is all working. People love this.
Yeah.
I could make a whole movie just
about
this.
What if Ed Rooney was trying to break in?
Whole movie. Yeah. But I won't get a pedophile. I'll get Belushi. No. Who is it?
Pesci.
Pesci. Oh, poor Belushi.
Oh, jeez, Russ.
Sorry, everybody.
One thing I don't get is Jeannie comes home and she goes upstairs and she checks on her brother and she's like, I knew it.
She knew all along.
But she knew all along when he's winking at her in the morning time when he's pulling a fast one on his parents. So I don't understand why she needed to confirm that he wasn't sick.
No, exactly.
Or was she just trying to confirm that he wasn't home?
Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
I knew he wouldn't be home.
Maybe.
Maybe that.
Or she knew that he was sick, not going
to school. He didn't want to go to school, but she didn't really maybe think. Maybe she didn't
think he was going to
actually leave.
Leave town.
Right. He was going to just be at home constantly changing his outfit.
Right.
Playing the flute.
Right.
Even though he's never taken one lesson.
You can certainly see the datedness of this movie. A couple references to "Do you speak any English?" was mentioned a couple times in this movie or whatever like that.
Oh, more than once?
Yeah, they did it to the.
I know they did it to the guy at the car lot.
Yeah, and then they did it again. Sorry, I can't remember exactly what scene. I should have wrote it down, but I did make a note that it was repeated a couple times in the movie about people not being able to speak English.
But it was good. I mean, I thought they just the guy was just
when
like,
Jeannie
"Do you know
was
what
on
country
the phone,
you're in?"
Jeannie was on the phone with 911 or whatever like that. She was like, do you speak any English?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, it didn't make any sense because why do you have to, you call 911 and they're just going to come. You don't even have to like justify, like as soon as you call 911.
Yeah, and she says, I've got an intruder in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why did she have to argue with them to come?
No, you call 911, they're showing up. Because if you call 911 and hang up, they're going to show up.
Right.
Let alone if you say, I have an intruder in my house, they're on their way.
Right.
Unless it works differently down there.
I don't know. Well, obviously.
In Canada.
I guess in the movie land it does.
Did we even have 911 back then?
Yeah.
Remember the introduction of 911?
No.
Yeah. There was a time when we were kids where we did not have 911. We would have to call like the police
actual
department.
Police number.
Yeah. Or the operator or something like that.
Right.
But then I remember it was a big like campaign on TV where it was like, now you call 911. It was a big thing.
Right.
But it wasn't something that we always had. You know, kids these days don't realize that.
I remember 411.
Oh, yeah. And was that's the information line?
Yeah. Yeah. You could call and say, I need this number. And sometimes it would give you a number.
What was the number you called to get movie information? Was that 411? Or was that like a different, like when you get
I think
phone
that was
book,
its own. Yeah. It was own, its back, own number. Yeah.
Like what's playing at Eagle Ridge Cinema?
Oh, and you'd have to sit and wait on the line. Yeah. Like now playing at, and it would like this theater and go off. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. I just want to know what's at low heat. And then like your mom's talking to you and then you miss it. Like, mom. And you got to listen to the whole thing all over again.
I wonder what kids do now.
Internet.
Oh my God.
There's an app.
There's an app for this.
Yeah, the Cineplex app.
I've completely messed up my, now I've messed now up
you,
my thing.
See, I think that's the internet. I made it offline though, so once you get it on your phone, it shouldn't kick
Google
off
wanted
anymore.
Me to rate the app, but I said, no, thank you.
Tell you what, do you want me to continue with the synopsis?
Sure, please.
Okay. Upon collecting the Ferrari and heading home, Ferris and Cameron discover that the car's mileage has gone up significantly. Cameron becomes semi-catatonic from shock, but wakes up after falling into a pool. Back at Cameron's house, Ferris jacks up the car and runs it in reverse to rewind the odometer.
Jack Lacken.
This fails, and Cameron destroys the car out of anger over his domineering father. Ferris offers to take the blame, but Cameron declines, deciding to stand up to his father.
Do you have a kiss for daddy?
Do you have a kiss for my daddy?
For my daddy?
For your daddy?
Yeah, it kind of shifts to me. Like, it's very silly the whole time, but this kind of part of it starts to, like, shift. Like, there's, like, this big moment where Cameron has, like, I'm gonna talk to my dad.
Yeah, and he's mentioned it throughout the movie, but now you can really see how much it actually irks him and really upsets him and how much of an effect it's really having on him, right?
And there seems to be a lot of, like, mention in regards, not only of, like, the pressure of his dad and him being able to stand up to him, but there's a lot of, like, end of a friendship kind of like feelings where they're like, you know, this is the end of school. They're going to move on. Some of the ones
they're going to be challenged to stay in each other's lives.
Exactly. Like Ferris, I think at one part says, I'm going to go to one college and you're going to go in another. So there's already this understanding that this relationship, this friendship is kind of coming to a transition or an end. I like the idea, if without your theory in place, but the idea that this is like Ferris Bueller is one of those guys who peaks in high school. Like, he's never going to be as cool as he is right now. I think they even say at one part, they're like, what do you think he's going to do? And they're like, he's going to be a fry cook. And I'm like, I can imagine that. Like, if they did a Ferris Bueller's
and that's sequel, what I mean. Like, what does Ferris have to offer other than those kind of good computer skills and being able to manipulate people? I mean, but you know what I mean? Like, he's skipping school all the time, you know, like...
I just like the idea that he, like, this is the best he's ever going to be.
Yeah.
Whereas in Cameron is just going to, like, excel for the
rest. Exactly. Everything from now on is only going to get better from Cameron. And as far as Ferris Bueller, this is probably the highest point of his life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whose pool are they in?
Yeah. Who knows?
I think they just randomly
you think
go
it's
to
Cameron's pool.
No, you, no, you it's think not they've, Cameron's
they've,
pool.
You think they've broken into it?
Yeah, I think they just went into some random person's house in their backyard because all their clothes are in a pile in the back.
Right.
Sloane's in her slip or whatever you want to call it.
They don't really have
bathing suits. So they're not at any. They're not at Ferris's house because Ed Rooney and Jeannie were there.
But I think the scene right after this
they're not at Sloane's house because she could have got a bathing suit.
But they could be at Cameron's house because they are, like, I think the next scene is they are at Cameron's house with the car.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think if anything, I mean, it's not like we know Ferris Bueller can run into people's backyards.
There's another scene. I don't know. I'd like to go back and kind of see where they are. But I remember saying, like, who's freaking pool are they?
Yeah. It's not clear, but I would guess that they're at Cameron's pool. Mm. That's my guess.
Charlie Sheen makes a guest appearance in the police shop there.
He's got tiger blood.
Tiger blood in his veins. Supposedly to produce the desired drugged out effect for his role as the drug addict in the police station.
He did drugs.
Charlie Sheen stayed awake for more than 48 hours before the scene was shot. And I'm sure he did. And I'm sure it wasn't just like, I'm going to stay awake. I bet it was like some major coke binge, hooker binge, something gosh. Like, oh, who knows? Come on.
Yeah. Well,
he's got
Charlie
blood.
Sheen. Yeah.
Exactly.
Blood. His dad was a big actor. So he probably, you know, was in a little bit of method acting. He's like, I'm going to apocalypse now this crap.
Right.
The horror.
How come Emilio Estevez never took his dad's last name?
I think they have different moms. Hmm. So maybe
still,
it's something to do with that.
I don't know.
It's like the Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez are related through their dad, but different moms. I don't know. Like,
was it like he's trying to make his
Estevez?
Own way?
Yeah, maybe. He was trying to do his own thing.
Maybe. He did.
And he's like the stronger son for it.
Mm.
You don't really see Charlie, you know, and Martin hanging out. But Emilio Emilia? Emilio? And I think they have a film. They've done some work together later on there.
Repo years. Men. They did a horrible. Oh. I've never seen it, but I heard they did. And they were in Young Guns together.
What?
Yeah.
Martin Sheen's in Young Guns?
Charlie Sheen's in Young Guns?
I'm talking about father and son. Because I think they did some later. Like, I think they Martin acted in a film that Emilio Estevez directed. I think they've worked together quite a bit. Oh. And they probably both had to pick up Charlie and take him to
together. Yeah. I'm sure they've done a couple interventions and drug rehab stuff together. Yeah,
teamwork makes the dream work.
Now, do you think I have a theory why Cameron destroyed the car? I think he's just tired of being a third wheel all day. You know, I think he's pent up. He's frustrated. He's watching, Ferris make out with Sloan all day, the girl that he really wants. And I think he's just had it.
I don't think there was much thought there. I think he just had his final outburst and he just glossed it. He cracked. He snapped.
Everyone goes to the zoo.
Sometimes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what Sloan said to him.
Right. Can you just play the Everyone Goes to the Zoo song?
Everyone goes to the zoo.
That was my monkey sound. Mm. Oh, that's a better monkey sound.
Mm. After walking Sloan home, Ferris realizes his parents will be returning soon. He races on foot through the neighborhood, but is nearly hit by Jeannie, who is driving their mother home.
She knew it.
Jeannie fails to get her mother to notice Ferris. But Ferris makes it home first, but Rooney confronts him before he can get back inside and tells him that he's going to make him have another year of high school under his close personal supervision.
I mean, Ferris probably likes that. That's maybe probably a good thing.
He would just drive him crazy all year and have fun with it.
This is where his power is.
Seeing the two through the window, Jeannie has a change of heart and allows Ferris to come inside, claiming that Ferris was at the hospital for his illness.
Thanks, Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. As Rooney flees from Ferris's Rottweiler, Ferris rushes back to his bedroom to await his parents. They find him in bed and believe he has been there all day, further suggesting to take the next day off as well.
That dogs can be dangerous.
Yeah, dog doesn't have a name or nothing. He just smashed it over the head with he could have killed that dog.
I mean, it looks like the dog should be put down. It looks dangerous.
It was rabid. They just kind of had that doggy door where it could come and go as it pleased, and it was aggressive. It's not good pet owner.
But it's funny humor. Good dog humor. Mm. I let the kids watch Father of the Bride. That was Steve Martin, the original one. And there's some doggy humor in that too.
Doggy humor.
Doberman Pinscher's kind of just chasing him around in a pool. Some funny stuff. The kids liked it. And then I saw the movie Dog. Have you seen the movie Dog?
Dog?
Yeah, it's Magic Mike. And as a veterinarian, an army vet. What do you call him when they, after they
a veteran.
Served? Veteran. Thank you.
Veteran.
But he wants to get back, but he's had so many injuries that he's not been approved. And then he has to take a dog, from one side of the country to the other side of the country. And he builds a relationship.
Oh, I gotta love dog movies until they die.
Oh, all dogs die.
Dude, I know.
And then they go to heaven.
Yeah.
Doggy
heaven. The Rainbow Bridge.
Oh, what? Like Mario Kart?
Mm-hmm. The mom and daughter driving in the car and home arguing with each other. I felt that was so real. I could totally see that being
did she remind
my
you
wife of, and daughter oh. or my mom and my sister.
I was going to say, does she remind you of your sister and your mom?
Yeah, a bit. Just friggin' nagging at each other, Oh, and then when the mom and dad get home and she's explaining to the dad, she got a couple speeding tickets. I picked her up at the thing. He doesn't even hesitate. He's like, I think we should shoot her.
The daughter?
The dad said that about the daughter. Did you hear that?
This is why she's so angry all the time at her.
Throw her under the bus, I know. Man.
And the time of that. Okay, so it doesn't make any sense as far as the fact that Ferris can race faster than the cars. He's running. The dad's, he runs by the dad.
Yeah, and his dad does
runs by his sister, but his sister has to stop to get a ticket, yet the sister gets home first. It just doesn't.
The whole timeline of this movie doesn't
Fever
make
dream.
Sense.
Fever dream.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like, how much can you cram in one school day?
Right.
Yeah.
So much fun. But it's so much fun.
It is fun.
And that's the point.
It is.
Don't think too hard about it, Russ. Just enjoy it.
It is. And post-credit scene. You think this is probably one of the first sort of sort of enjoyable post-credit scenes where people actually...
Yeah, I feel like this is what Marvel should do, is like just Tony Stark should come out and be like, you're still watching this? Go home. Pew, get out of here. This should be like, this is how they should do all Marvel.
I mean, they kept you...
get a life, you fucking nerds.
Strung you along with the bust scene there with Edward. I guess that's a...
Right.
That's a deleted scene. It was going to be in the movie, but...
And what a great...
Oh.
I mean, that's one of my core memories of remembering that.
Is that fine? Is that... Yeah.
But so, okay, so it's 6 o'clock. It's after 6 o'clock.
That's it was a deleted scene,
right?
So it actually was supposed to be earlier in the movie.
Yes,
I after Genie now. Triple kicked him.
I understand now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and then they just added it at the end,
right? So it's not chronological.
No,
may have to tell me again. It's a deleted scene.
It's a deleted scene.
Okay. It's a deleted scene. Oh, it's the deleted scene song, Pavlov's Bell. That's the movie.
Yeah. I got a little note here.
Okay. You got a note.
This movie should really be called Cameron's Adventure Day, I think.
Adventure Day.
It's
with
Cameron who has the biggest character arc and the most layers out of everybody in this movie. Right. If you really think about it, Ferris is a giant piece of shit.
And he's unchanged.
Yeah.
So he doesn't learn a lesson.
He's got no character arc. He seems very self-serving, extremely manipulative, and almost sociopathic at times. Mm-hmm. He did try and take the blame for everything, but just like always, Ferris gets his way either through sheer luck or manipulation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen, this is really a Cameron movie, I think. Yeah. Okay. If you really look at it.
But they knew what would sell. They know what would get all the girls excited.
No, for sure. If you say Cameron's wet dream, it's not going to sell many tickets, right?
That's what the Kleenex was in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was a snotty nose.
And the NyQuil, it was just hallucinating this whole thing.
Oh, it's Cameron's fever dream.
It's Cameron's fever dream.
Cameron's fever dream. Thanks, guys. Good night.
And how nobody cares about Cameron.
Nobody.
But everybody cares about Ferris.
Everybody hates Cameron.
Everybody cares about Ferris enough that the police are like, let him know. Let him know everyone's pulling for him. Yeah. The English faculty staff sent him flowers. Save Ferris is on outside.
Right.
It's on the water tower.
It's in the newspaper.
It's in the newspaper.
Right. I remember going how does the timing work on this again?
It's on the water tower. It's in the baseball game on the marquee. You know what I mean? So even further, how can Ferris be a real, like this is just, and he only, this is just this imaginary rock star that Cameron has manifested that he wish he could be. Everybody loves Ferris Bueller. He gets away with everything. He gets the girl. He gets, he has all the adventures, the fun. Everybody loves Ferris. Cameron just wishes he could be Ferris Bueller.
But at the end, he realizes that he can do things himself.
That's right. That's his character. That's why I say this movie is really about Cameron.
Cameron's big day.
Cameron's big D. Let's rate it.
This shit is awesome.
You suck.
This is the part of the podcast where we rate it. We give it a score of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We don't believe in zeros.
I don't think they even exist.
I don't think so. Because you got to give them at least credit for making a movie, right?
Yeah. Sometimes I'm zero agnostic. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I give this a 3. It's a strong 3. It might be even 3.5.
You want to change it?
No, I'm okay. I think I had a lot of fun.
Okay.
I enjoyed this movie.
Nice.
It holds up, aside from a few do you even know English kind of stuff. But holds up. You can kind of make little theories like yourself. I love your theories with this movie. I think it's a good John Hughes film. And I don't know too much about John Hughes films except for Breakfast Club, which was very important for me as a kid. And I watched that a number of times. What do you think John Hughes like reality curve is like if Breakfast Club was the most realistic and then I know Weird Science was the least realistic, where does this movie fall onto it? Is it a little bit
probably one step below Weird Science, I would say? It's pretty removed, I would think, it's got lots of groundedness and lots of real, like all the B players, like I said, all the background people, like it almost feel like they're actual real people. They probably are for the most part. It's just like, hey, I need an extra. Come in here, you know. Right. You know. But
what other cameos? You said there was more cameos.
Louis Armstrong was when the nurse, when the prostitute nurse or whatever shows up at the door call girl. I don't know. Yeah. She's ready to say the F word there. He's dressed up.
I thought it was going to be the S word.
He's dressed up like a milkman or whatever like
that. Louis Armstrong?
Yeah, he's right beside
Interesting.
Her.
Interesting.
Christy Swanson is one of the students.
And who's Christy Swanson?
Christy Swanson's a female actress.
Okay, good.
Right. She was in That's The Program. She was Buffy, the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Original Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And where was she in this movie?
She was one of the students. She's the one that says, my boyfriend's sister's.
Oh, interesting.
That's Christy Swanson.
Okay.
Ben Stein, obviously.
And who's Ben Stein?
The teacher.
Oh, yes.
Bueller.
Yeah, Bueller.
He's actually.
Ferris.
All his economics rambling was true stuff. He's an economics.
Getting Ben Stein's money was a thing, wasn't it?
He's a super smart dude.
I forgot about that.
And so John Hughes just told him to say, just talk about economics. So it was actually just his real
thought. Improvised.
Okay, my rating time.
Okay.
I gave it a 4. I believe this is an iconic 80s movie.
You believe.
I think when you peel back the silly scenes and look at it from the perspective of Cameron, it's got some nice through lines to it. And John Hughes is urging his teenage viewers to find their own paths in life. I feel you can still enjoy this movie some 30 plus years later by watching it every other year or so. So I feel it stands up. There's a lot of 80s pulp culture that was taken from this movie. And, I still quote lines from it to this day. Like I said, it's a simple movie, as far as, the cinematography structure, there's no big action scenes and all that, but it's the characters, it's the witty writing, it's the humor, the editing's pretty good and all that. And, so I think it's a solid 4.
Okay, Sean.
Stargazing.
Well, we're going to take advantage of the timing of this. We're recording on Saturday, the day before the Oscars.
Right.
So any big predictions for you there, Sean? Who do you want to win? The whale?
Yeah, I think out of everything I've seen, and I've only seen about half, I think, of the Best Picture movies. And I haven't seen some of the performances from some of the nominated people. But from what I have seen, yeah, I'm really rooting for Brendan Fraser to take home the Oscar. I saw The Whale last week and I thought it was incredible. He really is incredible in that movie. And I've seen Elvis. I don't see what the big hype about that movie
really
was.
Like
I didn't really like it
either. I haven't
either.
Seen The Whale, so
and
I can't comment about The Whale.
I don't see what was so incredible about Austin Butler's performance either. So,
but he is whatever. He is thought to win. Austin Butler is thought
to win. I don't know why he's favored to win. And I feel like out of all the sort of the bio singer picks, like the Ray Charles and the... Joaquin Phoenix.
Walk the Line.
Yeah, what's his name? What's the singer's name?
Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash movie and all that. I felt this one was not up to snuff with those ones either. Right. I know it's a Baz Luhrmann movie and it's very different and almost removed a bit from reality, but still.
Right. Yeah. It was too frantic for me. I didn't even finish it. I couldn't.
Yeah, that's Baz Luhrmann for you.
Well, I mean, I love.
And Tom Hanks. Him in a fat suit.
That was weird.
I'm done with Tom Hanks. I don't know.
What?
Well, I mean, I think he's a good actor, but he's just
you don't need him.
Like The Rock. He's just in too much. I'm he needs to take a step away for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he did Castaway, so he's not like The Rock. He's better than
The Rock. No, but I just mean like everything. He's just in a lot lately, and it's just like.
Like my cousin Otto. What's
my cousin
Otto?
The man named Otto. Another it's Western, not my cousin. Anybody. He was in, you know.
Oh, that. Apple TV movie.
Yeah. I never saw it, but
where he walks around and reads the newspaper. Mm. I'm the only one that can read.
So who knows? I think it's all up in the air. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Great movie.
Yeah. I really enjoy that movie.
So really rooting for, rooting tune for those two.
Yeah. I think it'll get some awards.
I think he'll get Best Supporting
for sure.
Hopefully.
Yeah,
that'd be nice to see.
Yeah, Best Supporting Actor and Actress, perhaps. Possibly a Best Director, Best Film overall. You never know.
You never know.
The sky's the limit tomorrow, guys.
Crapshoot. It can be political. It can be non-political. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. I don't have cable, though, so I don't know.
Oh, I'm taping it. You could come over to my house and watch it.
Sure. Or I just kind of go on the internet and see.
Oh, the internet.
Who wins? Who wins?
And that's been Oscar Corner.
I went and saw Cocaine Bear.
Oh, that.
Yeah, you were supposed to come with us, but we ditched you.
It's nominated.
Yeah, it's nominated for worst movie of the world. Oh, yeah, it's bad.
It's bad.
Like I said, I told you I thought it'd be at least bad fun.
Like Snakes on a Plane, bad fun.
But
it's not. It's bad, 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 bad.
Bad, 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 bad. Could have been, they could have taken it to another level and just made it completely campy and funny, but the jokes fell flat a lot of the time. There was only a couple really good ones. A lot of the death scenes. You thought for sure they'd go all out on the death scenes, but they didn't.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Avoid Cocaine Bear. I'm not even sure if I would rent it when it comes out. It's that bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
After last time we saw the Coen, after we talked about the Coen brothers movie, Old Country Road to Old Man, I saw that one of my Coen brothers blind spots was on, I can't remember what it was on, one of the streaming services, but I watched A Serious Man.
A Serious Man?
A Serious Man.
Never even heard of it.
Exactly. And it was I would say it's good, like 15 years old, okay. Possibly. Yes, it's interesting. It's weird. It's not one of my favorite Coen brothers.
Who's in it? Don't know.
Good question. Oh, geez. It's interesting. It's not like there's no John Goodman. There's no kind of some of their regulars. You'd recognize everybody, like some nice character actors, but yeah, kind of not their usual players. But it's not bad. It's not that good. Maybe it's a second watch. I also saw that 5,000 Years of Longing. So I've watched that now. That was the George Miller one.
Oh.
So that's like he got to do whatever he wanted because he's making Furiosa. And
with the Genie movie?
Yeah, the Genie movie.
Yeah. That was okay.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was fine.
That was different. Nice. It was cute. They got together at the end, didn't they?
Yeah. They. Wasn't it? Well, he goes back. Like she...
What happens?
He leaves, but he comes back and visits her.
Oh, yeah.
And they go for walks. So there, I think there's like that's very metaphorical. There's a lot of like some symbolism in that.
I liked it, but I don't remember too much about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. It was good. It was fun.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to Furiosa. Come on, George. Let's go.
Hurry up. Hurry up.
Not George R. R. Martin, who will never write another book again, but George Miller, who will do.
I got on the White Lotus train.
Oh, toot toot.
Went through season one, just at the early stages now of season two. It's good.
It's good.
Yeah. I don't see what all the hype was about. I don't think it's the second coming of Christ.
No.
I
mean, no, you probably, your expectations are too high.
Maybe.
Yeah. I enjoyed the second season more.
That's what people are saying, and that's what we're on right now. So, you know, come just finish the second season. Maybe. Yeah, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Characters are great. Jennifer Coolidge is amazing.
Yeah, she's hilarious.
She's so fun to watch.
She's so funny.
Hang on, you got a filibuster because I got to pee.
Okay. So Sean could edit this out, but why would he? Because I'm going to talk to you guys about...
What are you going to talk about?
Okay, Sean, I know what I'm going to talk about. No one wants to hear you in the background in the washroom. That's disgusting. Well, everybody, this is the time where it's just you and I tell you the real version of who Sean is. He's not a very nice guy. He keeps me in this basement. I don't really get to see what the outside world is. I have to just sit here until he comes over every couple weeks. He makes me do this podcast, and he sometimes edits it, sometimes he doesn't. He's really up in the air. He's kind of the mastermind behind all this, and he's in control, and if you're hearing this, if you could help me, if you could call the RCMP 911 and help me, and he's back. Oh, welcome back.
Oh, my goodness.
How was it?
Oh, it was great because I was holding that in for a long time.
That's what Corona will do to you.
That's right.
This is the Corona I Got a Pee song.
This is. I had a beer while we're doing this and it just kicked in.
You're not going to do the Corona I Got a Pee song?
Oh.
Right, makes sense.
I got a pee.
Holds up. I think I don't know,
you know what it's time for?
Oh, what is it time for? Random movie trivia game.
Nice.
Okay. This is when I give a card to Sean.
Card me.
I take a card. Neither of us have looked at these cards.
Mm-mm.
There's four questions each. Whoever wins, whoever gets them right,
whoever
the
wins, wins.
Wins the game. Usually Sean wins. Last time was no exception. You want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first this time.
All right.
Okay, ready?
Get in the zone.
What movie is about the making of another movie, The Room, which became known as the greatest bad movie ever made? So what's the
Disaster Artist.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
I'm not sure if I would have gotten that one.
Oh, there you go. Come in. No way, that's a different movie. What am I thinking of?
I don't know.
What's the one where he's up on the top of the roof deck and it's like a really funny line?
That's The Room.
That's
this one.
I know, but they're making a film about The Room, and I think that part of it is in The Disaster Artist.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay, here we go. Here's your question. Joe Pesci. Oh, here we go. Another, not Belushi. Joe Pesci and Marissa Tomei co-star in what comedy about New Yorkers in rural Alabama?
My Cousin Vinny.
Oh my gosh. Didn't we talk about that?
I want to go back and watch that.
Yeah, I don't think I've actually ever seen it.
Add it to the list.
I mean, maybe I have.
Add it to the list.
I'm going
to
add it to the list. Perfect. Okay, here we go. 1-1.
Okay. In Unbreakable, what is Bruce Willis's job? The M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong movie.
Ooh, I'm going to say he's like a plumber? No, okay.
In Unbreakable, what is Bruce Willis's profession?
Oh my God. Well, he's on a train. So maybe is he coming into work? Oh, frig. Is it somehow related to his powers? I don't remember. I remember the train. I remember him working out.
You're done. Security guard.
Fuzz. Fuzz, fuzz, fuzz. All right. The movie Stardust is based on a novel by which author? A, Neil Gaiman.
Wait, I was busy playing the stupid piano.
Okay,
sorry.
Go again. Go.
Okay.
The movie Stardust is based on a novel by which author?
Oh, jeez.
A, Neil Gaiman, B, Stephen King, or C, Clive Barker.
Stardust? Yeah. That first author you said.
Neil Gaiman?
Yeah.
You're correct. Mm. Well, good for you.
Okay.
Well, I guess security guard. I guess I got to watch Unbreakable again. Unbreakable.
What movie stars Tim Curry as a transvestite scientist?
Rock Horror Picture Show.
There you go. Perfect.
Oh, good thing. Okay, there we go. True or false, The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King won the Oscar for Best Picture in 2004.
Correct.
That's true.
It was the only one of the three that did.
Exactly. That's right. Even though The Fellowship is so much better.
It is the best one.
It's the best one.
And
my axe.
Oh, this is a good one. Happy Days actor plays the high school principal in Scream?
Oh, well, it's Fonz, the Fonz.
What's his name?
Oh my God, Henry Winkler.
There you go.
Oh, wow. I remember that. I think I've only watched Scream 1, and now they're making number 7 or something.
Number 6. It just came out on Friday.
Oh, nice.
Yesterday.
Unless you get this wrong, you win. True or false? The Exorcist is an adaptation of a Stephen King novel.
False.
Well, and who was it? And for an extra point, whose novel was it? Well, you're not that clever, are you?
No, I don't. You know, I don't read a word.
But you know that Stephen King did not write.
Yes.
The Exorcist.
Yeah.
All right. Probably because he was. Because when
such
was
an old movie?
Yeah, I know it's probably before. Oh,
that's,
hi, Scarlett.
That's what threw me off.
Hello,
oh, hi, Cinnabon. We got a little visitor.
There's
good
a
thing
dog.
Good thing we're done.
Oh gosh. Well, why don't you tell me my last question just so I can get it wrong?
You did.
Okay. So three. I got 3 points. You got 1 point.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
I got 4. You got 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if you want to cheat, that's fine.
Okay. Love you, buddy.
Love you, too. Okay. Have a good one.
See ya. Bye.
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast.